Hi there, listeners. Welcome to episode 260 of Never on the Backfoot podcast. In this episode, we discuss how Craig Brathwaite-led West Indies side defeated Pat Cummins Australia by 8 runs in that second test at the Gabba in Brisbane on 28 January to record their first test win on Australian soil after 27 long years. Shamar Joseph was the hero of this win with his 7-wicket haul in the second innings. In this episode, we deliberate and break down that test match win, what it means for the West Indies and larger discourses around the same. On the podcast today for the discussion, we have Dhruv Bhatia. He is an entrepreneur who runs his own tissue paper business from Delhi. His cricket fan journey started from the 1996 World Cup when he went to the Firoz Shah Kotla and he hasn't looked back since. He is a passionate student of the game and has been following the game avidly and closely for about 25 years now. As a hobby, he started making short analysis videos on Instagram on the game of cricket. Without further ado, let's get started. Hi Dhruv, welcome back to Never on the Backfoot podcast. We reunite on a special occasion now. West Indies has pulled off this remarkable victory. So yeah, to kickstart our discussion, what are your first thoughts on the win? Because it's almost been a weekend more, yet the win feels very special and incredible, right?
Hi Neha, good to be back again. Hope everyone is doing fine. And yeah, it's been a week, but still it feels just so incredible. It's like, it almost feels like, you know, your home country has won whenever the West Indies win for me. And that day, there were two games going on simultaneously. India were chasing. They were in a precarious position. And here, West Indies were trying to come back from behind. Australia were having a partnership. But the, you know, just the adrenaline I felt, a lot of people would have felt watching the West Indies slowly and slowly get back into the game and then almost get on top of the game and win was something else. I don't think anyone in the cricketing world was unhappy that day. Even though India lost that very same day at home, but nobody was unhappy. Even Pat Cummins wasn't unhappy. And when you see victories like this, you know, then you realize why we all love live sports so much. You know, sport is hope. And that's what that victory was.
Certainly, I think this match kind of was a testament to the same, because as Indian fans, you know, you rightly pointed out that, you know, we were dealing with the loss that day. But I think it is matches like this that kind of reignites that fire, right? That test cricket is here to stay. And the manner of the comeback is something that I think, you know, through the course of this discussion, we will look at. Now, even putting the match in context, you know, for our listeners, now, Australia began the day, you know, this was the fourth day's play at 60 for 2. And they were chasing 216 for victory. And, you know, getting bowled out for 207 was remarkable because West Indies pulled off a narrow 8-run victory, right? So at the start of the day's play, did you actually see it coming? And did you again think Australia, the dominant team, they will definitely, you know, run away with victory?
Yeah, so let's, I would want to start with you know, the previous days when West Indies started with about 60 for 5, then they recovered, got about 300 odd or something, or little, I don't remember the exact score, but somewhere around there. Then Australia were in a soup. They were 24 for 4, I remember. Then they became 50 for 5, 70 for 5. Alex Carey got bowled, the bails didn't fall, and then they had he went on to score about 65 odd that very quickly. And they gave West Indies only like a 28 run lead. And that is the moment I thought, shit, it's gone. This was the moment which West Indies had to seize, it's gone. Then again, West Indies grinded, and you know, some of the players just got them to a decent, like a 216 target. We got West Indies again, got some wickets on the third evening. They were two down, but Steve Smith was batting. And so you can never discount that out. And there was a bit of hope when the fourth day started. When I started watching in the morning, there was a bit of hope, but it was more like, you know, hope because you want this person to do well and you know the odds are against that person, so you just want to support that person. But realistically, I thought Australia will take this away. They tried to give them a sniff earlier. They couldn't capitalize. This one, they're going to take it away. And we know Australia always, you know, they give you one chance. If you take it, you win. Otherwise, they gobble it up. And I thought the chance is gone at one. And at 113 for two, I was like, it is done. This is done. Well played, West Indies. Well tried both test matches, but no problem. This was expected.
Oh, definitely. And also, you know, looking at this aspect, now Australia was what, 29 runs away, right, from winning that day-night test and completing a clean sweep of its test summer. But I think that's where this inspired spell by Shamar Joseph, you know, had West Indies on the brink of their first win down under 20 in 27 years. And it certainly was a dramatic fourth day because we had gone with this expectation that Australia is going to end up winning. So how would you describe that spell? And it was definitely game-changing, right?
Well, that's some the words are, you know, there have been probably thousands of articles written on that spell on every sporting website and everything. But still, you just see it. It was like a man possessed, you know, that something that this man is absolutely possessed, and there is something, there is his talent plus a divine power in him, which is you know, trying which is taking him on, which is like fueling him, which is like which is making him forget what is going on in his toe. And he can just only see one thing, and he's just bowling, and he just in his 11th over, he's bowling the fastest ball. In his 10th or the 11th over, he's bowling the fastest ball of his spell. It was, I mean, you can watch it like twice every hour and you can't get bored of it.
Definitely, because this is one of those spells, you know, you just cannot get enough of ever. And even looking at Shamar Joseph's story to greatness, right? It's remarkable how he became a cricketer, and he's been super inspirational for a lot of us. But have you also been kind of, you know, following the trajectory of his career to greatness?
Oh yeah, so I had heard of him. I didn't know his background or whatever. When this squad was announced and when they played a couple of A games or something, or the practice games, and he did well, so everybody, all these the Crick Infos and everyone was talking that, you know, it's certain that Shamar Joseph is going to make a debut and he looks like a bright prospect and stuff like that. But we've heard like those things many times before. But when we saw him at Adelaide in the first test, the way he batted, you know, a guy making his test debut, coming from the background he comes, and the way he batted with his head, you know, he was like he was not afraid. He was not afraid that I'm playing Australia in Australia. This is my first ever test game. He was not intimidated by anyone. So lovely, you know, a guy who comes from a village which is about the nearest places to ours by boat. The biggest city is even further away. New Amsterdam is even further away from where he lives. And there his family chops wood for a living, and everybody in that village chops wood for a living. That's why you see his forearms and biceps. They are not made in the gym. And it's a small village of 350 people. They only chop wood and sell it. And the food they eat is only what the fish they get from the sea and the plants and all, whatever. That's all they do. A village which didn't have internet up until 2018. Can you imagine a guy coming from there? I don't know how he learned to bowl, because you need to see something to become something. You know, as kids, you and me would have sometimes seen some bowler bowling. We liked an action. We tried to copy that bowler, which made us a probably some. It makes somebody a fast bowler. It makes somebody a off spinner. It makes somebody a leg spinner, because you follow something, you like something, and you know you're attracted to that thing. You want to be that. There was no internet, so he was probably in his childhood watching some TV, black and white TV or whatever TV coverage they used to get, sporadic, and he just started bowling with fruits. Then one day he has an almost fatal incident while cutting wood, and he decides to not to do that job, and for his kids move to us to the city. And there he, you know, goes to a fast bowl and is a security guard, and then he goes to a fast bowling clinic where somebody, one of the ex-selectors, sees him, Ambrose sees him, and they take him up. And this is already a movie script. You know, even if someone wanted to write a movie script, they could not have written such a surprising story. So yeah, he's the Bishop of Barakara now. And his smile, and yeah. his smile. If you see, even after the first test, I was watching when he came out to bat before his, you know, when he was batting with a smile, just not intimidated by the occasion, by the opposition. Then he bowled. He got a 5-wicket haul. He was happy. He was running around the park. Even here, just his, you know, may he smile forever and ever.
Most certainly. And, you know, as you were telling also, you know, I was getting goosebumps because the kind of struggles and the journey that this man has had is nothing short of remarkable. And also looking at this other major talking point now, this was Australia's first red ball loss, right? Now, after they win in the World Test Championship final against the Indian cricket team last year, they were just on a roll. So finally, do you think a reminder has been served that, hey, Australia is also human, they can also lose, and an underdog story is something we all definitely lap up?
Yeah, totally. And also on a lighter note, like, everybody loves it when the West Indies win, and everybody loves it when Australia lose. You know, because if somebody wins everything, you want them to lose. And they lost at home to an opposition. Their target was 7-0. So they have a couple of tests coming up with against New Zealand in New Zealand, which they are considering as their home summer only. And they are saying our target was to win all 7 tests. And they would have been easily 5-0 here, but for an inspired performance by Shamar Joseph, who he's rocked the cricketing world. He's just, I don't know. He's just taken the everybody's space. Everybody's, he's on every social media platform. He's just taken the whole cricketing world by storm. There was an India game going on that day, but the whole cricketing community was only talking about Shamar Joseph and on Australia, winning in Australia against Australia. So yes, Australians are human. They have an excellent team. You know, it's like amazing batting lineup, bowling attack. You know, all bowlers have 250 wickets at least. That's very, very rare. So it takes something to beat them. And yes, but it showed the world that they can be beaten at home.
Absolutely. And, you know, we always appreciate stories like this, you know, of the manner in which West Indies handed that defeat to Australia will go down in the annals of history, right? As one of those finest wins. And I think even speaking at the presentation ceremony, I think after the game, you had skipper of West Indies, Brathwaite, you know, say that he was very proud of the team and this was just probably the beginning of their journey. He also revealed that, you know, it was kind of the words, you know, by the former Aussie fast bowler Rodney Hogg that, you know, kind of spurred them on. So what were your thoughts on that comment that kind of, you know, snowballed into West Indies pulling off this massive win?
Yeah, they're always what I've seen with the West Indies team, even before our time or whatever. They are people and that whole group of islands from the Caribbean. They're full of pride, and if you hurt their pride, if you try to say things about them, they get really riled up. This happened in the 70s when Tony Greig once said the famous words that, you know, we were going to make them grovel. And then this four-pronged pace attack came about and they just won everything from there, and that became the legendary team. Then for the first time or the second time they won the T20 World Cup, Darren Sammy came up and said in the presentation that whatever things were going on with their board and how they were made to feel, where they didn't have uniforms and everything, that spurred them on, that inspired them, that gave them the fire in their belly, and they won the World Cup. And again here, Rodney Hogg said, they're a hopeless and pathetic team, which kind of gave them the fire and just unlocked that passion which they had, and the you know, turned their anger into something so positive, and it was an inspired performance. Look at their, like, West Indies of late are not known for their fielding, but look at how they fielded this game. Look at how they got their catches. Amazing. So yeah, you don't poke the tiger, but Rodney Hogg would have learned it.
Yeah, I mean, the West Indies team has always had characters, you know, kind of doubt them, and they come rising from the Phoenix ashes and just defy all the odds. That kind of makes them the team they are, and performances like this for all of us fans to savor. And I think even looking beyond the result, what are your thoughts on this victory for West Indies cricket, right? Now, in a broader context, does it kind of signal a resurgence of the team's fortunes, or do you just look at it as a one-off success and something that we are reading into too deeply?
See, it should, I don't know, resurgence, but yeah, it should get more people on those islands interested in cricket. These stories, especially of who got them there, like Shamar Joseph, his story will inspire a lot of youngsters who would have probably resigned to their fate of, you know, whatever they're doing or whatever, from the small islands to being in poverty or whatever, would have spurred them on to do something else. But again, we've seen this before. It happened in Headingley a few years back. Shea Hope and Roston Chase. Shea Hope scored twin centuries. They won against England. Roston Chase also, I think, had a good partnership. No, sorry, Brathwaite was there. Shea Hope and Brathwaite had a very good partnership. And they won that test in Headingley, but after that, they couldn't capitalize on it. But here, that time, they beat England in England, but England was not the best team in the world. And here, they have beaten Australia in Australia. Australia are currently the WTC champions, the top-ranked team in the world. And the way they did it, so probably this will hit them different. And but, you know, one problem here lies ahead is when you make such gains in this test series, like, they, apart from Shamar Joseph, there were 2-3 other players who played who looked like bright, and, you know, you can capitalize on those gains, but they don't play a next test until the next 5 months. So that kinds of halts your progress, and whatever positives you've gotten, they could come, you know, spiraling down because you don't have the opportunity to capitalize on them. And that is not their fault, but that is just the reality. So just hoping with fingers crossed this is not one off and they can do something better from here.
Definitely, and it's a very valid point because, as you rightly pointed out, West Indies doesn't play a test match for a long period of time next. So, what are some of the challenges you think that West Indies cricket would face despite this victory? Are there any structural issues or areas of improvement that kind of need to be addressed so that they can sustain their success? Because a lot of players kind of switch to franchisee cricket for like better monetary and lucrative opportunities. They don't want to play for West Indies. So, how do you think they can address all of these myriad of challenges?
Yeah, so there are these challenges will remain for them forever, and these challenges are not only these players going towards franchisee cricket is not just for them, it's a cricket problem now, it's a cricket world problem. So, and especially for the lesser boards who cannot afford to pay the kind of salaries a player from India, Australia, or England gets. So it becomes a problem, and you cannot blame the players also to not go and earn more money. It's kind of unfair. But the structural problems I would like to talk about, if we are just talking about Test cricket, is there. If you see the first class cricket structure and everything, the pitches are such which are not conducive to batsmen. Like they don't get good batsmen out of it. Right now, if you see, they're shaping up to get a good pace attack. But the batsmen, every 2 3 years, the whole batting lineup changes. If you see, there's Brathwaite, and around him, the whole batting lineup changes every 2 3 years. So they need some good solid batsmen for which, and all the batsmen who come. To the international team, their first class averages are anywhere between 25 and 30, which is literally, if you have a first class average of 25, 30, it's basically kind of says that you will not be able to perform at the top level, at the test level. People with averages who are averaging about 45, 50 in first class cricket, they struggle at test cricket. So there they need to see how to, develop better batsmen, how to develop better techniques and better batsmen so that they come up, which will help them in ODI cricket also, because ODI cricket also needs a certain set of techniques to last 50 overs, which will then give them success in ODI cricket and test cricket. So that is the structural problem I see. And yes, the money problem is there. The people, the good batsmen go into the attacking mode, and then they want to play franchisee cricket. Like even the more established players like Jason Holder here, he didn't come for this tour. He opted out of this tour, I believe. So that problem, they need to somehow talk to the players, give them some assurance, talk to the different countries which are involved in West Indies cricket, and tell them that please play test cricket for us and we will compensate you, or something like that. Something needs to be done.
Definitely, because there is definitely no dearth of talent, right, from the Caribbean islands and the West Indies at large. So perhaps, managing the players better and just figuring out a way has to be the way to go. And how do you also address the claims, right, when people say West Indies cricket is in decline? Because that's such a bigoted and short-sighted way of looking at the West Indies cricket culture and the ecosystem at large, right?
Yeah, but we can't turn our faces, turn our backs towards that statement also, because when people say that West Indies cricket is in decline, because they see that West Indies are not playing the World Cup, they play the qualifying tournament for the ODI World Cup, and this time they didn't qualify for it. For the T20 World Cup, they do qualify, but of late they are not making the cut and going ahead. Their ways are not the same, like their team is not the same like the champion T20 team they had. And in Test cricket, these results are far and few. The last they win, they do well at home. They don't do very badly at home. But when we as Indians watch only Indian series, Indians have like had the better of them. Last two series they've gone there, and when they come here, there's no chance. They lose. They've lost in Sri Lanka at spinning wickets and all of those things. So you know, it is in decline, but their passion is very strong. Their passion is very strong. Their pride is very strong. That's why any statement against them riles up the team and makes them play like one. And hopefully, like, the decline will stop, and then there will come a time which will make the West Indies cricket rise again. There will come players which will make the West Indies cricket rise again.
Certainly, and fingers crossed for that, because we have seen time and again, you know, players emerged from this setup who have gone on to make it big, right, in international cricket. I know we talk very nostalgically about that 70s and 80s, but you still have cricketers coming from the stable who have, you know, made household names for themselves, not just in franchisee cricket, but also, you know, playing for the country. So let's hope that is also managed better. And looking at another aspect now, when you look at test matches too, they're not very profitable commodities, right? Especially for boards like the West Indies and other struggling boards. So do you think test match victories like this will actually help? Because as we know, you know, the ICC also takes a cut in the revenue in test matches. So how do you think they can support West Indies and other nations, you know, who are trying to find this foothold back in test cricket, you know, in a world where we see T20 cricket dominate so much?
Yeah, ICC has a big, big role to play there. And they did a survey a few years back where all the players said they are, like 80% of the players said that we want to play test cricket is our major priority. And, you know, the world talks about test cricket. The world doesn't talk about T20. The world watches T20 cricket but doesn't talk about it. If you ask anyone which is the T20 match you remember from any of the n number of leagues going on, anyone who's following that league only, if you ask anyone the last which is the IPL match of the last season you remember, there'll be very few people remember anything here and there. But test cricket, people talk about test cricket, people remember test cricket. We all talk about the Gabba test where India won. We will talk about this Gabba test. We will talk about this test match where England beat India. So you know, test cricket are the roots of the sport, and it is also, everybody universally agrees, it's the best format. But the, you know, these boards struggle, which don't have enough money, like West Indies or South Africa or Sri Lanka or Pakistan. And there was a time when all these boards had very good cricket, test cricket teams, which now they're kind of been in transition for a long time. They're not interested. Players are not getting enough money. So the ICC needs to come in there. And, you know, whatever ICC, as you said, the ICC gets a cut from the revenue in these test matches. And they should, and whatever the cut they get from the big three, from India, from Australia, from England, rather than distributing it back to those big three, you know, those funds should go more towards countries like in the Caribbean, in to Pakistan, to Sri Lanka, to Bangladesh, to only develop test cricket. And these are the victories. This is the right time when, you know, if test match victories like this can't help, nothing can help. Nothing will help if victories like this can't pique your interest in test cricket. There's a very nice suggestion given by our very own Ravichandran Ashwin, where he said that we should make a test cricket fund where all the money you're earning from different franchisee leagues all over the world and everything, some and all the cricket boards should put a fund, and that fund should be distributed in developing test cricket all over the world. Because, you know, because as a child, if a child watches a 4-day or a 5-day game, which is enthralling, engrossing, and everything, he will get hooked onto the sport. I don't think a good T20 game will get you hooked on, because tomorrow there will be two more games of T20 happening anywhere in the world. They don't stay with you. That's what I think, that ICC has to free up calendars. Don't have bilateral T20s, don't have bilateral ODIs if it's not a 50-over World Cup year, and just free up those calendars and play Test cricket. Feed the money you're getting from T20 into Test cricket, and we'll have more games like this.
Most certainly, because Test cricket is undoubtedly the pinnacle of the sport and should be retained and preserved at all costs. And definitely, I think endeavors taken by the ICC to kind of further the cause is a welcome step and something that has to be considered. And even looking ahead, like what are your expectations for this West Indies team, right? Because they have like future series and tournaments coming a little later on. I mean, do you think they have this potential to build on this victory and become a force to reckon with in international cricket once again?
Yeah. Forced to reckon with, it will take time, I feel, but become competitive, it will. I can see the players they have. They can become competitive. And when there is this problem with the smaller boards, why people are not watching the Test cricket? Because their teams are lacking, and it is not making competitive Test cricket, right? And so that's why there comes a point where the audience doesn't want to watch. If the skill sets are mismatching, the audience wouldn't want to watch that game, and you almost know the result is a foregone conclusion. But in this team, if you see, I think the next assignment, if I'm not wrong, is in England, in England during the English summer. And the bowling attack looks good. Shamar Joseph will be there 100%. Kemar Roach plays county cricket in England. His skill sets is very good for the, English conditions, so he will be there. Then I hope Jason Holder comes back, who's also gives you the all-rounder role, and his bowling also will suits there. Then there's another guy called Jaden Seals, who didn't play this series. I don't know why he didn't play this series, but I think he's injured or playing franchisee cricket, I don't know, but he's good. So their pace attack looks almost, and Alzari Joseph, not to forget Alzari Joseph. So their pace attack looks, ready for English conditions, which can do really well there. The batting, they have to work, but Gavin Hodge has given a glimmer. Like he looks like a batsman who bats with a head above his shoulders, doesn't go rash. Brathwaite is there. Chandrapaul, he's looked good, but of late he's not been able to capitalize on the good test start he had on his test career. Alec Athanase looks like a pretty player to watch out. Maybe he needs to be groomed and put his mind in the game. So these are like, these Joshua De Silva is a good wicket keeper, batsman. So right now, we've spoken about eight, nine names who can really make a difference. There's Bonner, who didn't play these series, but I liked him in the earlier series. I don't know what's happening with him. And so we've taken about at least nine names, I think. And with one or two good support additions, you make a good 11, and you will be able to compete in England, because your bowling is good. We know that your bowling is shaping up. Bowling is good. We've seen it in England, in Australia. Both test matches, you've troubled the Australian Australian batting order, which is not a mean feat at all. And it's just that the batting needs to, start taking responsibility. And what I saw in this series, again in this Australia series, like everybody, those whoever got starts or 50s or whatever, they kind of then threw it away. They're not seasoned, they're not trained to bat long for hours. And after, there's a lapse of concentrations once you reach 45, 50, and then you just play a rash shot, or just, play away from a body and give a caught behind or something, if they fine-tune that, if they do that, they can really compete in England.
Exactly. And I think there's just so much to look forward to, you know, as the other series beckons us. And finally, you know, what are some of the lessons that, you know, other cricket playing nations can actually learn from West Indies' performance in this match? Because it is matches like this, right, that teaches you a lot about resilience and comebacks. So any, you know, parting thoughts for you?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I always say, for everyone who's listening, hearing this podcast, that Test cricket is the closest thing to life. You know, it will teach you, give you life lessons. In every day the game is played, and you will won't realize. And just when I was prior to this, there was a Pakistan series, which also Pakistan could have won a couple of games in that series. But they didn't field well, they lost the important moments, and Australia just came back and won it. And, you know, for the other teams which are watching, other cricketing nations, which are, again, I'm talking about particularly the lesser, but the less privileged cricketing nations in terms of money and everything, you know, there was a line of the poem which I was reading, and it says, "Leharon se dar kar nauka paar nahi hoti, koshish karne walon ki kabhi haar nahi hoti." So that's the lesson for everybody, like, not why just cricket teams, for everyone who's listening, and also for the cricket teams, that when they came on the fourth day, they came to win. And they said, "We will give it our best." Shamar Joseph came on. Shamar Joseph was not supposed to come. He wasn't at the ground. He was called, "You come and we'll try. Let's see. You bowl and we'll try." And then they couldn't take the ball off him.
Yeah, I think that was beautifully put through, because, this match has been nothing short of a fairy tale. And even as we reach the end of our discussion, like, do you have any last and final thoughts for our listeners?
Yeah, I'm assuming anybody who's listening into this is a fan of Test cricket, and I just appeal to everyone, just keep watching Test cricket. Keep, you know, when I was watching this game, there was, like, the numbers were there. In the morning, there were 10,000 people watching, 11,000 people watching. And when West Indies was about to win, it became into 2 lakh, 3 lakhs or something like that. So just give it your love, and Test cricket will never disappoint you. Whenever you want to look away, it'll pat you on the back, and you will have to look at Test cricket, and it'll make you smile. So keep loving Test cricket. Watch as much as you can and learn as much as you can.
Yeah, that is a fitting conclusion. And on that note, I'd like to draw curtains on our discussion. Thank you so much, Dhruv, for once again joining the podcast and sharing these remarkable insights, you know, discussing the discourses of this win, and, you know, taking a nuanced deep dive was, you know, quite an experience, and I'm sure our listeners will also be able to resonate. I'm hoping we can, you know, have you back on the podcast. And until next time, stay safe and take care. Cheers.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a pleasure, Neha.
Likewise.
Take care.
Thank you so much, listeners, for tuning into this episode and for your unstinted support. Please follow and press the bell icon on Spotify and subscribe to the podcast on Google Podcasts for the latest episode updates, and stay tuned. Do check out @NeverOnTheBackFoot on Instagram and Threads, and @NeverOnTheBack1 now on Twitter called X for the latest facts, updates, fresh content, and a lot more that's coming up this cricket season. The podcast is also available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, Spotify for Podcasters, and many other platforms. So please do spread the word. Never on the Backfoot is also on YouTube, so don't forget to subscribe to the channel and stay tuned for a lot of insightful content coming up there as well. Until next time, stay safe and take care, listeners. Bye for now.